Before I get started this week, I wanted to give a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and TMS coach based in Los Angeles. She was a burnt out high school teacher who battled TMS symptoms for years before healing herself completely and leaving her dead end job. Simply put, she gets it, especially the frustration of doing all the right things, implementing the tools, and still not getting the results that you deserve. If this is you, I encourage you to book a free introductory call to learn more about her tailored one-on-one coaching program. During this time, she will identify the specific barriers that are getting in the way of you fully healing, unraveling blocks such as subconscious or negative beliefs, fearful thought patterns, or unfelt emotions is crucial for living a pain-free life again. Don't settle for partial healing. Bet on yourself again by going to jeanniekolwin.com. That's JeannieKulwin.com to book your free call. And also, while you're there, check out her impressive testimonials page to see her clients' transformations firsthand. Welcome back to the podcast. It's nice to be here. It is Thursday, May the 2nd, and there's a couple of birthdays. So The Rock, happy birthday to The Rock, whose birthday is May 2nd. And then also one of the girls that I coach for soccer, who's not listening to this, but Izzy, shout out to you. Happy birthday. As I'm recording this, we're going to start practice in about 2 hours, and Dad's bringing cupcakes. So we're excited to celebrate Izzy. She's a great contributor of the team and awesome little kid. So, okay. So for this week's podcast, if you've been a longtime listener of this podcast for, let's just say, more than 4 years, maybe more than 3 years, I spent an inordinate amount of time dunking on chiropractors in this podcast. I don't do it so much anymore. And one thing that's funny is that there was a chiropractor that I knew and respected who I would read his content and what he had to say about mind-body healing and symptoms being more emotionally rooted. Dr. Mike Murray, who's a former practicing chiropractor, who I haven't stayed in touch with. He's made a couple of appearances on the show, but there is this one from August 14th, 2019, where Dr. Murray was on the show and it was so good. A lot of great feedback. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people listened to this episode. And again, it was almost 5 years ago, which is just crazy to think about. So let's listen to Dr. Murray and I. This is a longer interview. This is a little over an hour. So I just want to prepare you for this show. But yeah, let's take a listen to Dr. Mike and I.
We have this tendency to always think, oh, it's a stomach problem. It's got to be something serious. We're raised to believe that. And as I just like flipped my thinking about it, it was literally almost overnight. It was crazy.
Yeah, no. That's super interesting. Well, let's start at the, I'm not even going to tell you when I started rolling, but, so with me is, Dr. Mike Murray. Dr. Mike, by the way, like, where am I calling you from? What part of the world are you in?
I am in Brussels, Belgium currently.
Cool.
Originally from New York State, lived in the city for the last 8 years.
Okay.
And married a Dutch woman, so we're in Brussels now.
Off you went.
Off I went.
I don't even, because I always think, like, I know he's in a different part of the world, but he sounds just like me when I, you know, when I talk. Yeah. And I'm from California. Yeah. And I don't even hear New York in what how you speak.
I get Canadian sometimes. I've been accused of talking slow, and I think that's what it is, so it's got to be some of my upstate roots and, yeah, just my natural demeanor.
It could be some of the rugged mountain man, longer hair and beard look too. Because I'm very, you know, I my hair is not quite as long as yours. I'm trying to get it there. It's like the world's slowest process. Maybe that's TMS, the fact it's growing so damn slow. But
it takes a while.
I mean, I'd always been told like a half an inch a month, but it feels like it's going at a, I'm at 14 months now and it's not even to my shoulders. It is just real slow, but it's going to get there. And the beard looks great. So kudos to you.
There you go. Thanks, man.
So I have been trashing chiropractors on this show for a good year and a half. And when I first came across your name, which was maybe, I don't know, 6 months ago or so, and I was like, oh, here comes this guy, and he's going to talk about inflammation, and he's going to talk about vertebrae being out and all this. And then to my pleasant surprise, it was really none of that. And so I want to start with
I don't think any of it, right? I hope not.
Yeah, right. None of it. So there's a couple ways that we could take this, and I want you to pick one or the other. So either we can start with your formal training in chiropractic and what made you go down that route in the beginning, or we can say, when did Mike's pain issue start? Because I bet that that's a big, you know, a big genesis and a big component of the story. So it's up to you. What would you rather start with?
Well, yeah, let's just, why don't we just dive into the training for now, kind cool. of just cover sort of some quick history there, and then get into the rest of it, get
let's
into
do
the
it.
Thick of it.
Yeah, let's do it. Shoot, tell us when you started doing the training, you know, where you went, if you want to share that, and kind of why you got into it.
Yeah, absolutely. So how about this? I never forget, my mom came home one afternoon crying, just in hysterical tears. My brother and I are sitting there on the couch looking at her like, what is going on? And she starts explaining to us how we have these subluxations in our spine. You know, she had just come back from the chiropractor. We've got these subluxations in the spine, and that this has been, you know, the silent killer all along, and it's ruining our nervous system. And, you know, mind you, I was like, I don't know, 18, 20 years old. And my brother and I were looking at her like, she's crazy. That's nonsense. And that was our initial impulse. And so she took us, you know, she insisted, you guys have to go to the chiropractor. Took us to the chiropractor, you know, they do the whole thing, right? They take our x-rays and, you know, we come back and they just show us how terrible our spine is. And as a young, you know, adult, that's like a pretty terrifying thing to see. And it's pretty convincing when you have this like health professional standing in front of you telling you how everything's wrong and that your nervous system is so screwed up. So of course, you know, my brother and I were like, yeah, well, you know, hey, mom's paying for it. She wants us to go. Why not? Right. So we start going to the chiropractor because I, you know, they showed me like what a normal spine should look like, quote unquote, normal spine. And then what mine looked like and how that was different. And it was, it was a little scary. So anyway, started going to the chiropractor, you know, and it's a positive environment. The doc was always in a good mood. The employees were always in a good mood. The patients were always in a good mood. So it was a pretty uplifting experience in general. Like I enjoyed it for the most part. And it was like, I used to paint apartments for a living or like as a teenager job, you know, and I can remember one day painting in the apartment, just like this lightning bolt kind of hit me in the head and said, I think I want to be a chiropractor and go be a, you know. So of course I go home, I tell mom and dad, they think that's an amazing idea. Hallelujah. Our son's going to have a good job. So they're super supportive. So off I went to chiropractic school. And I guess that was 2006.
Okay.
I think I started chiropractic college in the fall of 2006. I went to New York Chiropractic College in upstate New York. And yeah, went through the training, you know, the whole, it was an amazing experience. I mean, we got to dissect a human cadaver for 3 semesters, and that was incredible, just incredible.
You know what's interesting is that my mom's a biologist, and when she was in grad school, I was very young. I was probably, I don't know, 7 or 8. And a lot of times, like, you know, my parents are both in school, and babysitting's not cheap, and daycare's not cheap. So sometimes they would bring me to class, and they would basically just pass me off to other professors or student teachers that were at the college. And I got passed to the anatomy professor once when I was 7 or 8, and that day in class they were dissecting a cadaver. And so At 7 or 8, I remember they covered the face, but what I still remember to this day is the way that like the fingers looked and the fingernails looked is what's kind of always stuck with me. So an interesting experience. If you've never seen a cadaver and what Dr. Mike is talking about, it's an interesting experience for sure.
Yeah, it's a unique experience for sure. And I'll tell you what, I had only dissected a frog and a worm up until that point in my life and didn't know that that was actually part of the curriculum going into chiropractic college. And then my chiropractor made a comment about it one day and I was like, hold up, what? What?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I was actually pretty freaked out. It sounded too intense for me. And then I tried to warm myself up by going to those like bodies exhibits and body worlds. And I'll tell you what, it's not the same because those do not smell. Regular cadavers, it's an awful smell.
It's ethyl or something, right? What are they, or embalming fluid? What is it? Because I know what smell you're talking about, but I don't know what it is.
I'm assuming it's some sort of formaldehyde. I guess I never asked the specifics of what the liquid is, but yeah, it's intense and it stays in your clothes, and so you just burn those at the end.
Yeah. Yuck. Okay. Well, all right. So you go to chiropractic school. A great experience. Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. So, in school, you know, they're talking to us about how we are going to be realigning the spine and, you know, fixing what is a subluxation, which is essentially the idea of the subluxation is just like this mini dislocation, which I don't agree with anymore. Side note. But, in school, I thought, well, okay, if bones are out of place, my question was, what is causing the bone to be out of place, right? And it seemed to me that there's more muscles in the body than there are bones. So it's got to be the soft tissue, right, the muscles and the ligaments, imbalances in the tissue that's pulling the spine out of place. And so myself and, you know, maybe a few other of my classmates, we felt like we were outsmarting the whole system, and we started studying soft tissue therapy extensively. Because that wasn't really touched on in school. I mean, it was, you know, maybe a short one semester class, but it was very superficial type musculoskeletal treatment.
Yep.
So I started taking seminars in something called active release technique, which they proclaim to be the gold standard in soft tissue therapy. And, you know, it's this whole training running you through the entire body, teaching you how to do scar tissue removal from soft tissue, muscles, ligaments, tendons. So I started taking that when I was in school because it just seemed to me that, well, it makes more sense to treat the muscles than the bones. So from there, I then went on to study with a gentleman named William Brady, Dr. William Brady in Boston. And he was a teacher of active release technique who then broke off and started his own approach called integrative diagnosis. And what I really liked about his approach was his whole philosophy was use your hands less and use your mind more. And the thing about active release technique is they didn't really have a system for why you would apply treatment in a certain area. Like if a person came in with pain, you would just active release treat everything in that kind of surrounding area, almost like throwing the kitchen sink at it in a sense and hoping for the best.
Yeah.
And God bless them. They're helping a lot of people. So, you know, I have nothing against it, but it just seemed like it was a lot on the hands. And so I really liked that Dr. Brady had a system of movement assessment for then why you would treat a certain area.
All right. So before we jump back to Dr. Mike, I wanted to let you know this episode is brought to you by Pain-Free Comeback, the proven mind-body program for athletes with chronic pain. Pain-Free Comeback was created by certified chronic pain coaches Miriam Gauci-Bongiovanni and Alec Kasson. Both guests on the show multiple times by themselves, but even just a few weeks ago. Miriam is a serious rock climber, and Alec is a former semi-pro cyclist whose former teammates include national champions and Olympians. Both face severe chronic pain, scary structural diagnosis, and know what it's like to have their athletic activities and identities ripped away. They're both pain-free today with remarkable recovery stories and have helped numerous athletes do the same. Now, they're offering a first-of-its-kind program unlike anything I've come across. What makes Pain-Free Comeback unique is that it's built specifically for athletes and active people. Together, Miriam and Alec package their over 20 years of experience learning about chronic pain and optimal athletic performance into a greatest hits, so to speak, collection of videos, audios, and exercises that have empowered numerous chronic pain sufferers to create remarkable breakthroughs. I checked this program out myself, and I highly recommend it. It's the type of offering I wish that I would have created, but I'm glad that they did. Their signature Pain-Free Comeback program is on sale now, and it comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. To learn more, go to painfreecomeback.com. Let's get back to Dr. Mike and I.
So I studied with him for a really long time. I mean, through a lot of my career, I was going to seminars and stuff. Dr. Brady and some colleagues. And so I was one of the only, actually the only integrative diagnosis practitioner in New York City. And there was a couple within Jersey. So I spent my career focusing on soft tissue injuries and, or at least a large chunk of it. Right. But during that time, it was back in 2008. I took a seminar by this guy, Dr. James Chestnut. And he talked about innate wellness. And one of the classes that I took was on the innate state of mind and mental health and well-being. So right from the beginning, I was always talking to my clients about their stress, you know, how it affected their body. And you can see it. You could see it on their faces. I mean, I could just tell when they came in, like, I could tell by the look on their face if they were in more pain or not, because, you know, or what was going on in their life. So really early on in my, like, professional career, I started asking myself the question, well, what is causing all of these muscles to be so tight, right? And my philosophy was thought, that, you know, fearful, worried, anxious thoughts were causing the muscles to contract and consistently be tight, because I just kept seeing the patterns coming back in my patients, right? They would come in with neck pain. We would treat it. They'd feel a little bit better, a little more loose. You know, they would come back in. They're still complaining of very similar pain. And because I was doing soft tissue treatment, I was spending more time with my patients. I would ask them just, you know, what's going on in life. And they would start telling me about, you know, relationship issues or work issues, you know, family stress, you name it. And to me, it was just so apparent that that was the real cause of the problem. That was what was causing the pain in the muscle tissue and causing it to be so tight.
Right.
So that was my first hint that something else was going on.
What year approximately would this have happened? This sort of, you know, I don't know about metamorphosis is the right word, but when your ideology maybe started to really take more of a dramatic shift?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I'd say 2013, 2014, somewhere around there.
Okay.
Because I can remember I worked at a couple CrossFit gyms as like a soft tissue provider, and it was when I was working at those CrossFit gyms, and it wasn't until 2015 that I opened up my own like physical location outside of the CrossFit gyms. And so, but at that time in the gyms, like you could, you know, I remember, I'll never forget this one time, my friend Alex said to me, he goes, the reason why you like CrossFit is because the stressed tiger likes to be chased. And I was so offended because I was so into CrossFit, and I was like, I'm not stressed. That's not why I do CrossFit. And then I'll never forget, like one day it just clicked and I thought, no, he's right. I'm a little high strung. I'm stressed. And so I'm trying to get this energy out with this extreme activity. This makes a lot of sense, what he said. And, you know, so then I could see that in all my patients because they were CrossFitters, and you could just see, it was like they had this nervous pent up energy that they had to shake out with this really extreme form of fitness. And
you know what's interesting, that's that, so I've told this story before, but I'm a CrossFitter, just went to the class at 6 a.m. here in Seattle, yep. Just before we started rolling. And my wife worked for a guy probably 6 or 7 years ago who was also a CrossFitter. You know, he was probably, I don't know, he's probably 50 or 55, CrossFitter, really great shape, all this kind of stuff. And he and I were actually competing at a competition, the same competition. And in between events, we were having this conversation on the side, and he was telling me that as a boss, or you know, as a general manager of this business, that he really likes hiring CrossFitters. And he said the reason is that they have this desire to be the best at whatever it is that they want to do. They will always push themselves. They always want to be number one. They always kind of this. And I didn't give it another thought. I was like, well, yeah, because I was like a top salesperson and I like CrossFit. And so, yeah, that makes sense to me. And when I look around at a gym like this and I think about the cost that it takes to go to a CrossFit gym, because they're typically very expensive compared to just going to LA Fitness or 24 Hour Fitness or something like that, that these have to be people that are making some kind of a living that affords them the ability to drop a couple $100, or if you're in New York, a few $100 maybe per month.
Yeah.
To go to these gyms. And so 5 or 6 years later, 7 years later, after I found Dr. Sarno's work, I thought back to that conversation. I thought, huh, like, I wonder if there really is something to that, that there's a certain type of makeup in the way that these people think and the way that they go about their business and the way that they carry themselves that ties them into CrossFit, but might also predispose them to always having some kind of a physical problem. Because if you go into, I mean, if you're in my gym, it seems like 70% of people that come in are also spending 20 or 30 minutes before or after class using a foam roller or working on their quote unquote mobility and things like that. And I feel like that's not just a coincidence.
Yeah, exactly. And who does it remind you of? Somebody who's highly driven and wants to succeed, and, you know,
every page of Sarno's book.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So,
All right. So you're working at a couple of gyms, and then you open up your own practice or your own physical location. So continue the evolution.
Okay. Well, the nice thing about getting into my own location was that within the CrossFit gym, there was an idea that, well, Dr. Mike treats soft tissue injuries, and these are definitely from CrossFit. So it was sort of, that's what I was expected to do. And people didn't like hearing about how their, you know, mental states could be causing their pain. I mean, I can remember when I first started talking to people about it back in the day, I was going about it totally wrong. I would say, well, you know, stress really has an effect on the body. And these people would look right at me and they'd say, I'm not stressed, you know, like really anxiously. And so I quickly learned, like, okay, don't approach it that way for sure. So, I mean, you should have seen my first office. It was so funny. Like, it was super zen. I mean, you know, plants everywhere and some candles and stuff. I mean, it was like, I thought it was perfect. I got to control my music and everything. I loved it.
Yeah.
But, so, you know, then it was a little bit easier to start having those conversations because the environment itself lended itself better to talking about what's going on in life and things. So that was in 2015 when I broke off and started my own physical location. And I quickly learned that the best way to talk to somebody about, you know, what's going on in life is to share what's going on in your own life. Right. So just relating it to them, like sharing my experience from a vulnerable point of view and telling them exactly what I'm dealing with, you know, mentally, then they start to open up because they feel like, okay, this is a safe space. I can share as well.
I mean, why else do you think that Brené Brown is like one of the most popular people in the world right now because of all of her talks about vulnerability, right? It's exactly.
Yeah. It's incredible. About. Yeah. Yeah. And she's amazing. So, and I had read Sarno's book prior to this, and so it affected me the first time I read it, and I had given it to quite a few of my patients. And it's an interesting thing, you know, you're in business and people are coming to you for physical hands-on care and they're expecting that, and then you're telling them, you know, about like their mind state and how that can affect their health and how their body feels. And some of them want to, you know, some of them are okay with hearing it. Some of them don't want to hear it. But at the end of the day, like there was many times in my, it was interesting. There was many times in my career where I really tried to make the shift to full on like mind body care. And like Sarno found, like not everyone wants to hear about that.
Yep.
You know? And so it can be a challenge as a business owner where you're trying to talk to people like about this stuff and they're looking at you like you have two heads and just with this attitude of no thanks, I'm going to go to the guy down the street who will gladly adjust me.
Right.
And so it was, you know, a couple of years there of this internal tug of war where, you know, I could see the connection between thoughts and emotions and how it affected the body. I was talking to people about it. I was really wanting to go full time in that direction. But at the same time, you know, you've got bills to pay and your practice starts to suffer when you start having those conversations initially. And,
you know, I know that, that this is it's a struggle that, Caitlin Michaels, who does the Mind Body Mastery podcast, or formerly known as the Mind Body Mastery podcast, because she went to acupuncture school and, you know, spent dozens of thousands of dollars getting trained in that. And then had kind of the same thought that you did, how can I have people that are coming in that want a certain type of care? And I start talking to them about their, you know, their emotions and their stress and stuff like that. And, how do I reconcile that? And she said that really, it seemed like the best ingredient or recipe for her was just to tell people straight up, like, this is my thought. This is my ideology. Let's think of acupuncture as something that just is relaxing and feels good, but leave it at that basically.
Exactly. You nailed it. And that's exactly what I started to do as well. I started coming in, people would come in, I'd tell them my ideology, my thought, and I would say, look, let's just treat this as, you know, we're relieving some tension in the muscles, relieving some tension in the spine, but that this is not the fix. This is just a band-aid. This is, you know, support to get you out of pain temporarily, but we really need to start digging into what's going on. And what I found was the people who took me seriously and they sat there patiently and listened, their results went through the roof. you know, they would come in, you know, after a few visits, and they had been journaling and doing different strategies, you know, in this field, and their eyes had just completely lit up, and they were smiling, and they were giving me hugs because they were so grateful to feel so much better. And the people who would come in and they hadn't been doing any of the recommendations I had been giving them outside of the office, you know, they were just coming in hoping that the adjustment would make them feel temporarily better. They didn't really ever get the results, the full long-term results that they were looking for. And it got to a point where I couldn't even do that anymore. Like, I despised the hands-on treatment so much because I just, in my soul, in my heart of hearts, I believed, like, this is not what they need. I cannot do this anymore. And that was actually causing a lot of pain in my body because I wasn't being, like, I didn't have full integrity with myself. So I got to a point where it was in March of 2018, I'll never forget, where I drew the line. I had gone to Tulum, Mexico on vacation. And while I was on vacation, I decided right then and there, I was like, no more, can't do it anymore. And so from that day forward, everybody I talked to that came into my office, we talked about the mind-body connection. And if they didn't like it, I wouldn't even charge them for the visit. I would just say, hey, you know, it was nice talking to you and no harm, no foul. Like, you know, if this isn't for you, that's fine.
So in your experience, like, one thing that I'm fascinated with, and I haven't asked, so the physical practitioners that I've had on this show include, I would count like yoga instructors in that realm. Mm-hmm. I would count physical therapists in that realm. So Dr. Prusak or, Jim Prusak is a part of that. Caitlin Michaels. I've also had a lot of medical doctors, even a spinal surgeon, on this show. One thing I've never asked though is like, so Sarno and his, progression as he wrote his books. He wrote 4 best-selling books. And yep. In the beginning, and even I think into the second one, Healing Back Pain, because I've listened to it on Audible a couple of times, he was pretty hard set on the really the only affected parts of the body for TMS basically is within the back and the trunk, and that was kind of it. But then when he wrote the next one, The Mind-Body Prescription, I think in 1997 or 1998, his language started to evolve, and he started saying that it's pretty much now like, you know, fair, all things are fair game. Like, nothing is off limits. And yeah. Then it seems like any system can be affected. So for you, like, as you started to evolve in the practice and maybe in that period of time where you were doing some hands-on care, but making it very clear that, you know, this is a band-aid type of a fix. In your experience, was the back like head and shoulders, when I say back, head and shoulders, I mean like head, like is the back the most prevalent symptom that you would see, or what are maybe some of the more other common ones that somebody would come in and make complaints about?
That's a great question. And I used to ask myself this question. You know, I spend a lot of time walking my dog, and so I would often ask my question: why is it always the back, or why is it primarily the back? Right? Because it is primarily the back. I'd say that is the most common area of the body that I see, right? I definitely have seen this in feet, knees, you know, all kinds of, you know, wrists, right? Elbows. So it does present in other areas of the body. And my philosophy is that tension is tension, right? It's going to present wherever there's like that, you know, the nerve pathway from the brain to that part of the body. Maybe there was an old injury there. So the nerves are heavily myelinated or whatever. But I've seen it all over, but definitely primarily in the back. And, you know, it's funny that I ask myself this question while walking my dog, because you can witness an animal's stress response in their back. So, for instance, if another dog started barking at her, she would immediately tense up her whole back, right? Her hair would stand up.
Yep.
And that's just like the natural instinctual response in any creature's body, is to kind of hunch, you know, briefly and contract the back. And humans are not immune to that. I mean, think about it. If your boss starts coming down hard on you, or anybody, you know, starts giving you a hard time, like you contract. You sort of protect the front, the organs, the soft tissue, right, the heart and all the digestive organs, and you curl forward a little bit. Even if it's just on a micro level that you don't even notice, that's primarily where this is happening for sure.
It's interesting. So one of the things that, and this will probably lead into a deeper conversation, but when I bring up this kind of stuff to people and they dismiss it, you know, family members, friends, whatever, and there's sort of a dismissive tone about it. A lot of it seems to stem from, you know, everybody's got stress in their life, basically. So why is it that I would have this chronic shoulder issue? You know, not everybody has that, and it's just stress, and, you know, it is what it is. You know, basically just dismissing the fact that that stressful situations can lead to it. And I guess that maybe this will lead into a conversation of stress in daily life and thoughts, the things you've talked about. You know, where's the connection to repression? How do you unwind that? Like, let's maybe start at the beginning of that, because that was kind of a big question. But when people sort of dismiss the idea of stress being so impactful, in your training and your research and your clinical experience and things like that, talk about, like, why is it that stress can lead to all these problems, and what sort of things is it affecting, and why is it so prevalent?
Well, why is it so prevalent? I mean, because we're all human beings and life is crazy. You know, I mean, life is extreme. It's a contact sport, right? So we're all getting kind of knocked around, and it can be a stressful experience. Sorry, I got distracted with that last part. Can you repeat the first half of the question?
Yeah, no, it's okay. So when people are dismissive of this idea, it seems to be around the fact that everybody's got stress, so why doesn't everybody have quote-unquote symptoms? But I think maybe what they mean by that are the same symptoms. So why do you think it impacts certain people in the back or the neck versus other people in the wrist or the feet? Like, what is it? Or is it just, you know, it is what it is, and it's, you know, because everybody seems like they have something, but some people are, it's a migraine, and then another person it's neck, and another person it's a foot. So have you been able to make any inferences on why it affects certain people in certain places?
That's a good question. And I get asked that question a lot, actually, from people that I interact with. And quite honestly, and I mean this in all, like, you know, love and everything, but I don't think it matters. Like whatever area of the body it's presenting itself in, I don't think it, like, knowing why is it this area isn't going to help you heal it. Like, why this area, I don't think is the right question. I know, you know, of course there's, like, Louise Hay, she wrote the whole book about healing your body, and she had it broken down, like, okay, if it's in this area of the shoulder, it's related to this certain stress, and she mapped it out that way. But at the end of the day, like, that's just her thought about it. And there's really no way to prove, like, oh yeah, financial stress is held in the lower back for everybody, you know?
L4,
like,
L5.
We'll never be able to prove that. And so my opinion is let's not focus on that. And, focus on, you know, what are the thoughts, what are the emotions, and, you know, wherever you're feeling tension in the body, it's related back to those.
And so I guess maybe that leads into one of my, contentions, and something that I still even struggle explaining to this day. So Sarno has a lecture that used to be able to be found on YouTube, but people can buy it now on his legacy website. But it's the same lecture that he would do for people in New York. And
he talks, I have it on DVD.
Yeah. So one of the things that he draws this picture up on this board and says that basically these are all the things that are causing this are all things that are under the surface and things that you'll never feel, and they're never going to come out. So sometimes where I get confused, and sometimes where I have trouble explaining it to people, is this idea of journaling and writing about the events in our life. It seems like, and if that's to solve the problem, these are obviously things that we're now aware of because we're able to put them down on paper. But a lot of Sarno's original teachings talked a lot about this idea of never being able to feel them and never even being aware of them. And so talk about this difference between conscious thought, which would be more in journaling, versus unconscious thought, which seems like it was a lot of what Sarno talked about.
Sure. Absolutely. I'd be happy to. You know, what's interesting to me is that Sarno would say things like it's hidden below the surface in the subconscious and you're never going to find it and feel it. And what I find most interesting about that kind of comment is that it's very disempowering, and it actually creates a lot of fear, right, inside the person, because now they think that, okay, I've got these hidden thoughts in my mind somewhere and they are wreaking havoc and I can't even access them because they're in my subconscious and I've been told I can't access them. To me, that's actually counterproductive, the thought itself. So I definitely lean more towards the thoughts that are going on in your head on a day-to-day basis. And certainly we all have a conditioned pattern of thinking that we've acquired through our lifetime. And I think what's going on as far as repression is that we're just not aware of the thoughts and how fast they're happening. Like, thoughts happen so fast, and it's just like a barrage of thoughts for our daily lives, right? And if we're not paying really close attention to them, almost really on a moment-to-moment basis, and I don't say that to create any neurosis in somebody, but, you know, when you start to cultivate this attentiveness and this awareness to the thoughts, you start to see how fast they're really happening. And you also start to see like how they make your body feel. And not only like tension and pain wise, but also any type of energy that's moving inside the system, whether it's related to anxiety or anger, and it's, you know, like pulsating waves of energy under the skin, or this heat inside the body maybe that someone might feel with anger. You really start to put the two together, and now you see the connection very clearly. And I think that that's a really important milestone to reach.
When you prompt people to do, well, I guess, let's say, so Sarno has the mind-body prescription. What's the Mike Murray, what's the Mike Murray prescription?
Oh, what's the Mike Murray prescription? That's so funny. That's so funny. That's a good one. So I got a lot of benefit out of creative writing, expressive writing that David Hanscom talks about, right? And that was very early on when I was healing my own conditions, you know?
He's been on the show, by the way, if you didn't know.
Yeah, I figured you said spine surgeon, so I had a feeling it was him. And that's a phenomenal book, and, you know, I got a lot of benefit out of creative writing. And as I was going through my own healing journey, all of a sudden I had this awareness one day that, okay, well, this writing is really just helping me blow off steam. So if I am angry, if I am excited, if I am anxious or whatever is going on, and I start writing or journaling about it and just letting it out, that helps me to blow off steam. But if I'm not doing anything to prevent anger from building up inside my body, then I'm going to need to journal for the rest of my life, or do expressive writing. And in his book, David Hanscom kind of makes light of this fact. And he says, you know, anytime I start to experience pain in my body again, my wife says to me, hey, honey, have you been doing your journaling? And I go back to doing expressive writing and feeling better. And as I was looking at that, you know, and seeing the effects of it in my own life, I realized, to me, it seemed like it was similar to a massage or a chiropractic adjustment or any type of external treatment, in the sense that it helped to relieve some tension, but ultimately it wasn't digging out the root cause of the anger, right? And so I'll share from my own experience. I harbored a lot of anger towards multiple people in my life when I was going through some of the more severe TMS-related pains. One of them was my mom. Another was a bandmate of mine, right? And it wasn't until I was able to forgive them and let go of the anger that I had towards them and start to rebuild rapport with them that the anger stopped building up inside my body. And I know David Hanscom does talk about forgiveness in his book, but I don't love the approach that most people take, because they ask you to sit there and think of the grievance. And I find that in just thinking and mulling over the grievance, you're reliving it, and that will generate more tension and anxiety inside the body. You know, you could hook me up to a heart rate monitor and I start telling you all about the grievances that people have done to me over the years. My physiology is going to start to respond negatively, right? I'm going to start to contract, and my blood pressure is going to increase. My heart rate is going to increase and everything. My breathing will become shallow. So when it came to forgiveness with my mom, it was, I actually got a lot of value out of a book called A Course in Miracles. And maybe people are listening to this are familiar with Marianne Williamson. I know she's running for president right now, or the Democratic nominee there. But in the book, it talks about seeing the innocence inside of everybody, and what you know, whatever your spiritual beliefs are, you know, some might call that their soul or their, you know, whatever you want to call it, doesn't matter to me. But really starting to see like that my mom, whatever grievances I had against her, she didn't ultimately, like, she did the best she could with her level of understanding in life. And so starting to see that and recognize that, like, deep down she loved me, and, you know, seeing that she was essentially kind of just lost and scared, like most humans are, and starting to view her through the lens of compassion and forgiveness, that anger stopped building up inside of me. And then all of a sudden my relationship with my mom improved, and I didn't have to change her in any way. And I had spent so much time in my life trying to change who she was, to be who I thought she needed to be, right? So she could be better at whatever, you know, it was that I thought she needed to be better at or change. So forgiveness is a big part of what I teach, because I want to help people to recognize that innocence inside of everybody. And I know that not everyone wants to hear about forgiveness. They're thinking, no, I can't forgive. But, you know, it's no accident that every major religion and spiritual path in the world teaches the importance of forgiveness.
Well, I think it's, I think that's actually one of the more, excuse me, profound things that's been said on this podcast from any person. And the reason I say that is, so I'm like storyboarding a future episode where I'm basically talking about, it's a journaling concept, but being able to recognize that you do have anger in some way, because that's a really hard thing for people to grasp. And my favorite movie of all time is The Dark Knight with Heath Ledger and Christian Bale, and, you know, about Batman. And there's a quote in there, and I can't remember the real name of the guy who plays Alfred, but he's talking about the Joker, and he's talking about a bandit that he met in the, I don't know, in the Amazon forest or something like that. But he said that basically he was stealing, but he wasn't spending anything, you know, he wasn't profiting off the stealing. It was just the act of the stealing that he wanted to do. And he goes on to say, and relate it to the Joker, that some men just want to watch the world burn, right? But okay, if you can almost step back and say the background of the Joker is this really pretty horrific childhood. And so if we can view it through the lens of that, that has a really different reaction. I think of like people in my life that have made me filled with tension. I'm thinking of like a particular boss that I had at one point, and this person was, you know, very narcissistic, and I felt like very short-sighted and all this kind of stuff, and really just sort of placed a lot of emphasis on this person is just a total, you know, a total jerk, and they're the root of all my problems. But if I can step back and say, I mean, inside of there very well is likely somebody that had something happened to them, or they were treated a certain way, or they grew up a, you know, different upbringing. It's not like they were born. This is all conditioning. Everybody has this type of conditioning in some particular fashion. It's almost like, can I really be mad at that person forever? You know, they don't know any better.
Yeah. I mean, we grow up in a society that, you know, cultivates fear and anxiety. And so it's no wonder that people behave in a, you know, in the fashion of like a scared animal, you know, and They're not their true selves. I actually have a fun exercise that I can kind of walk you through. It doesn't take too much time, only a few seconds, honestly, that can help to point at this inner truth, you know, or this inner sense.
Let's do it.
If you're open to it.
Yeah, no, we got 15-ish more minutes on the clock. Okay. We're good. Let's do
exciting.
It.
Exciting. Okay, cool. So the funny thing is I actually got this from a hip-hop artist, KRS-One. From the South Bronx, but he lectures all over the world about like the true culture of hip hop and spirituality and things. He's a really interesting guy. KRS-One stands for Knowledge Reigns Supreme Over Nearly Everyone. It's like is that called an anagram? I'm not sure what that is. But anyways, I got this from a talk that he gave into a college, and I thought it was so interesting. So what I want you to do, Eddie, is I just want you to take a few seconds here. And everyone at home, right, that's going to listen to this, I want you guys to do this as well. And all I want you to do is close your eyes, and I want you to repeat your name, you know, two or three times inside your head. Don't do it out loud, right? I just want you to say your name inside your head a few times. And then when you're done, with the exercise, I just say, okay, I'm done, or whatever.
All right, I'm done.
Cool. Great. So the question I always ask people when I have them do the exercise is, you, for instance, you heard yourself say your name inside your head right now, correct?
Yep.
But you didn't use your ears.
Right.
And you said your name, but you didn't use your mouth, correct?
Correct.
So the question is, what was that that said your name, that said it out loud, quote unquote, in your head and heard it?
I mean, the intellectual Sarno geek says says something deep, something subconscious, or my heart would be the other part.
Sure. One of the things I try not to get too caught up on is trying to figure out what that is, because at the end of the day, we can't know. We never will know. But what I will say is that it just happened, and we don't know what it is, but it's that spark inside of you that makes you Eddie, right? That is who you are. Eddie, your name, is just a social convention that we have given you so that when I say the word Eddie, you turn around and look at me. But the true you is that small voice that just said your name, right?
Yeah.
And it's that energy that came into your body when you were just a neural tube in your mom's womb, right? The first organ that's developed is the heart. And all of a sudden, that heart just starts beating out of nowhere. But it's not an exact replica of your mom, right? It's your own unique personality that this electrical impulse came into that organ and turned it on, and there you were, right? But Eddie's not who you are. That energy is who you are. And I don't know what that energy is, and I don't even care to try and figure it out, because there's purposely a mystery of life, right?
Right.
But as I can see that inside myself and start to recognize it inside other people and rest in the knowing that that is who they truly are, not their behavior, not their actions towards me, not the things that they say, right? Unless they say loving things, and we could talk about why that is. But, you know, that is who they truly are. And when I see that, I can, forgiveness becomes a little easier.
Yeah, definitely. So is that like a, is that, to me, that sounds like maybe it's one of the, if you were to have a patient in front of you and you were to start telling them about this, you know, this whole theory or change in philosophy from what they would come to you normally to do, which is, you know, crack my back, do whatever. Is this, it almost sounds to me like a primer, like here's my thought. Let's try this, you know, let's try this for a second and do this little exercise. Is that typically where you may place it if you were working with somebody today, as an example?
It depends on when it comes up, but I've been using it in the beginning very often with people because it just creates a little more curiosity about what's possible or what's going on. You know, I'll never forget, there's a book called, I can't remember the name now. Shoot, I wish I could, but it's got a horse running on the cover. It's got a horse running on the sand. I can see it so clearly. And in the beginning of the book, the author is asking you, because you're reading the book in your head, and he asks you very point blankly, what is this voice right now that hears you reading this book, right? Because you're saying these words in your head and you're hearing them, but you're not talking out loud, but you hear it. And I'll never forget, I left it out on the coffee table at my dad's house on purpose because I knew that he would pick it up. He just can't help himself. Like, he's curious person. So I knew he would pick it up and start reading it. And no, sure enough, I come down that night and he's like, I picked up that book that you had on the coffee table. He's like, now I can't stop thinking about that voice inside my head. You know, and it was just like that, the way the author worded it was able to get him to start thinking just a little bit deeper about what's going on inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a fun little exercise. So I use that with people.
And then the I'm curious on the like the journaling prompts, because that's one thing that people, like somebody just messaged me this morning from somewhere in she's in New South Wales, so in Australia, and had said that she had started journaling and you know, didn't really necessarily find, it doesn't sound like she's making a lot of progress. It doesn't sound like she learned about it all that long ago. And I think that maybe the extra conundrum is I do Olympic weightlifting primarily. She does powerlifting primarily. And I think a lot of times, like strength athletes, they're too in tune with their body, which seems good until you start having a problem. And then, and then I feel like the more that you learn about TMS and chronic pain, it almost becomes even a bigger problem because you see everything as a symbol. Like you get a back pain and now it's like, what am I repressing? What am I repressing? And you might beat yourself to death.
Yeah.
Even though there is such a thing as, and maybe just tweak something that needs a couple of weeks to chill out. You know what I mean? Like that's very possible.
Totally.
As well. So, what are some of the journaling prompts that you would point somebody to, especially in the beginning? Cause in Hanscom's book, as an example, cause I sat 3 feet away from him, at the Washington State Athletic Club when we did our interview together. And he had said, he talked about this, a couple of studies, and it's just so fascinating to have a spine surgeon tell me this, but he'd said that there are zero studies that you can find anywhere that show, back surgery as being a fix for chronic back pain. There's zero. You won't find a single one. He said that he's been able to find 1,100 where creative writing relieves chronic pain. And so, you know, creative, free writing, expressive writing, I think is actually what he calls it. But that means different things to different people. And so I think a lot of times people pull out the journal or they open up a Word document on their computer and they open it up and now what? You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. As far as like some prompts and stuff that I give people, I'm not too strict about it. And all I tell them is to just go for it on the paper and that they'll tend to get a little more comfortable with the process as they go along. And so I tell them to write about, you know, anything that that's making them angry, anything that's making them excited, right? Because excitement, that same energy is like an anxiety kind of anxious based energy. So write about, you know, things that are making you excited, anxious, worried, fearful, angry, and just go for it. And so my preferred choice was always creative or expressive writing, where by the time I'm done, the piece of paper looks like a Jackson Pollock painting. I'm not worried about punctuation. I'm not worried about spelling. I didn't even look at the paper. I would just stare at the wall and just express myself and really go for it. Like just let it out. And what I found was that in the beginning, it was a little uncomfortable to be so truthful with the paper. And this is why I liked expressive writing, because I think in like a more of a traditional writing, journaling based approach where you're kind of writing each letter perfectly, you're slowing down the process. And so it becomes very cerebral. As opposed to with the expressive, it's a little more like animalistic and you're just letting out some of that emotion, which I think is really helpful. But I don't give people too many prompts other than to just start and go for it.
That's a good suggestion. You know, one thing that I would love to do in the final few minutes that we have here is a little bit of debunking. Sure. From somebody that's a physical practitioner, especially in the field of chiropractic, some debunking and ultimately telling us why these things are not even things. They're things that are said on Instagram. They're things that are talked about by people like Kelly Starrett, who instill fear in all of us athletes that everything's broken and imbalanced and, you know, all that sort of thing. So I did a similar thing with Jim Prusak, and I'm curious on kind of where you sit on these, and I feel like they're going to be pretty darn close. The two of you should do a symposium together. If you weren't on opposite sides of the world, that would be pretty awesome. But
sure.
So, and actually, I put this down as a quote because you, I think it was when you were talking about your mom coming home and talking about subluxations, but using the term perfect spine. When I've gone into chiropractors' offices in the past, they inevitably always have a plastic spine that they bring to me, and this is how they illustrate what's going on, right? You have this thing that's out, and you have this thing. And then they explain it that it should be this perfectly straight line, like a ruler. Tell us about the idea of a perfect straight spine, this plastic model, versus somebody who is out living their life and isn't sitting in a chiropractor's office in a piece of plastic.
Okay, great. Yeah. Well, I've got one for sale. I've got one of those plastic spines for sale, by the way, if anybody wants to buy one, it's still in my basement. So just going to throw that out there. Send me a message. And I'll tell you what, prior to coming across TMS, I can remember a time in my life where I was convinced that all of my neck pain was coming from bad posture. And so being the perfectionist that I am, I was militant about my posture, whether I was standing, sitting, or sleeping. And the irony about that type of attitude towards posture is that you're just like creating a lot of fear around anything that isn't quote unquote good posture. And you're also creating a lot of undue tension in your body just by like always trying to stand up straight and contract the muscles to like achieve this quote unquote perfect alignment. I don't buy into the whole idea anymore. To me, it's more important that the spine is just for the most part relaxed. And again, you know, I get some wisdom from my dog, but I started looking at my dog and I was like, she's never concerned with the position of her spine. She sleeps in the shape of a C, whether it's on her belly or upside down, all the time, right? Like, animals have no concern about the position of their spine.
My cat.
But the difference is, yeah, cat, exactly, anything. You know, the difference is animals take a break. Like, she goes and runs around at the park and has a blast, and then she comes home and goes to sleep and takes a break. And humans don't take a break. We just go, 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 go. And that just creates so much tension in the body. But as I was able to, you know, heal myself with this whole path and everything, I could care less now about like how I sit on the couch. Like, I slouch on the couch, right? I'm just relaxing and letting my spine sink into it in whatever shape it wants to. Do I think that, you know, you should stand up straight for the most part? Yeah, of course, that's a good practice. I think that's a healthy position when you're walking around. I'm not walking around, you know, just looking down at the ground all the time. But I think that there ends up being this fear where if anything outside of perfect posture all the time, whether it's sleeping, standing, or sitting, people start to freak out and think that they're doing damage, and that's just not true.
There's this product, and I just looked it up to make sure I had the name right. It's called the Donnie Thompson Formal Bow Tie. And I remember when posture was such a big thing that was being told to me as the root cause of my pain. It's this thing that it's almost like I don't wear a bra, but it's like a reverse bra, basically. So you put this thing
on. Yeah, I see these a lot.
Yeah, like ties around your delts, and it's supposed to, you know, push your chest out and pull your shoulder blades back and stuff. So the recommendation on the website is to wear this thing while you're doing everything, typing on a computer, whatever. And it is very hard to type on a computer somehow with your shoulder blades completely back, your chest out, you know, all this kind of stuff. But you're right, because every little nuanced movement that I would make sure, okay, is my back completely straight? Is all this? And, you know, after I found the Sarno stuff and kind of debunked a little bit of the posture elements, I was just thinking about how ridiculous that whole idea sounds, that like it shouldn't take this much thought to live day to day. There's no way that my grandmother or other people that I see that are elderly that are kind of hunched over are trying to put themselves in perfect posture and all this. I mean, it seems so ridiculous now when I look back, but I feel like it's something that's posture is so, there's people selling programs online right now for $47 to fix your perfect posture and get out of pain. And it's like, it makes me angry enough to journal sometimes.
Hey, yeah. Well, you know, with their level of understanding, they're doing the best they can, right? They think that that's what people need. And so that's why they offer it. And that's how I feel about, you know, most chiropractors, because I'm a chiropractor in general, like they really believe in what they're doing, and that's why they continue to do it.
Right. What about trigger points? Because that's a popular one too.
Yeah, I mean, it's nonsense. What do you want me to say? You know, I mean, like I joke there, but you know, to me, a trigger point is just a focal point of tension inside the muscle. Right. And so, you know, you press on it, the person said they press on it and they say, aha, there it is. See, I told you that's the problem. And again, we just have to ask better questions. And to me, the question is, why is the muscle so tight? What is causing constant contraction in your traps? Right. So I don't see the trigger point as the problem. I see the trigger point as the result of the problem. And so in that sense, the trigger point is not a problem. You know, you could rub it till you're blue in the face and, you know, it's still going to come back if you don't, you know, figure out how to remove the tension in that part of the body.
Bonus points, by the way, if you're going to DM Mike and ask him for his plastic spine, I will throw in at a discount my big blue Trigger Point Travell and Simons book if you want it.
Funny. Do you have the Theracane too?
I bet I've got between E-Stim machine and little balls to roll around on and two Theracanes and all this kind of stuff. I probably have, I don't know, $700 or $800 in mobility equipment sitting in a big plastic tub in the garage.
Now, it's time for that garage sale.
I know. Gosh. It's just, yeah, I mean, I've got all sort of this weird board that has these pegs that you put on it that you lay on. It's, I got that. A lot. What about, talk about leg length discrepancy and why that's
okay.
Right now, that sounds like it seems like it's a really hot thing. A good buddy of mine he's a chef and works in a restaurant. You can imagine probably what the tension levels would be like in that environment. But started having back pain, started wearing this weird brace. His chiropractor said that it is it's due to a leg length discrepancy. So come in 3 times a week for, 12 weeks or whatever the prescription is. Talk about leg length discrepancies.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I hear this one a lot too. Oh, I was told I have a leg length discrepancy. So first off, if somebody tells you you have a leg length discrepancy and they did not take an X-ray of your leg bones and pull out the measuring tape and measure them, right, then there's a very good chance that they're already just like shooting in the dark. They're essentially making it up, because we learned in school that a true leg length discrepancy, you have to measure like the femur and the tibia and see a difference in the length of the bone to give you like that type of diagnosis. And anytime someone asks me about their leg length discrepancy, I ask them if that happened. And of course they say no, right? They're just laying down on the table. Someone pushes their heels together and says, ah, yes, it's a leg length discrepancy, right? And again, we have to ask, like, what would cause the body to create that type of, perceived imbalance? So in my opinion, the muscles of the hip, especially the psoas, which attaches from the lower lumbar spine, well, the whole lumbar spine, right, to the hips. If one of those, if one of the muscles on, like, say, the right side of the body is just a little tighter, it's going to lift the hip up. It's going to essentially kind of curl that side of the spine and the hip just a little bit, which will lift, the whole leg, right? And so that when the person lays down on the table, they're a little crooked, visually. And the provider says, oh, yeah, okay, here is the leg length discrepancy. And so, again, the question is, well, what is causing all of the tension in the psoas? And I always refer back to thoughts and emotions and whatever causes your body to be in a tense fight or flight state.
Yeah, definitely.
How was that?
No, that's perfect. Because there's a couple of – and it still comes up as suggested viewings on YouTube, because you got to understand, I spent 2 years, probably 2 to 3 hours a day looking at YouTube videos of – chiropractors and physical therapists saying that they're fixing these problems. So I get these, a lot of people just love the sound, obviously, honestly, of like back cracks. I don't know. It's a weird thing. Apparently on YouTube, they're actually called crack addicts because they like the sound of it. But, the leg length thing that you're talking about is exactly how it always is. It's like lay face down on the table. They go down to their feet. They put the heels together. And yeah, they just look at, oh, you got a millimeter and a half on this side. Because that was something a Rolfer told me once, was that I had a, looks like she just stood 3 feet back and said, looks like you've got a half a centimeter or a centimeter hip hike on your right side. And so that's probably the root cause of all of your pain. So, for $200 an hour and 15 sessions, we can probably loosen that right up for you, which, by the way, spoiler alert, did not work. And I just spent a lot of cash on it.
Yeah, it's a great way to justify treatment. Again, they think they're doing, the right thing, because that's their level of understanding, and, by selling orthotics and treating the muscle tissue. But I just have too much of a philosophical mind. So my question was always like, well, why are the muscles more tight on this side of the body?
Right.
Yeah,
it's always kind of this like, if I could go back in time and just ask more questions in a lot of doctor appointments in my life, I feel like that could have made a huge, the scariest diagnosis that I would always get was thoracic outlet syndrome. And then, you go and you Google that, and the images are terrifying. But There was never a why did that happen. It was just you have this thing. And I feel like a lot of, you know, like when we're going through school and we're learning about social studies and things like that, and we just say that there, like if a social studies teacher were to say to you that there was the Civil War in the United States and all these people died, I feel like the next logical thing that they always teach is here's what caused the Civil War. You know what I mean? As opposed to just saying this war happened and it wasn't like the North and the South were sitting next to each other on a bench and then just started going at it. You know what I mean? It wasn't like two ravenous wolves. I don't know. The last one maybe, and you've kind of, I'll bunch all these together, but you talked about posture, which is muscle imbalances. Like it's basically the same thing to me. But one of the favorite words I think of chiropractors in general, the ones that I've met, is this mystery term of inflammation. You have inflammation in your back. You have inflammation in your traps. You have inflammation here and there. And so, you know, buy these supplements for $79.99 every other week and come in 3 times a week for the maintenance plan. I guess dispel a bit of that. Because one thing Sarno also talked about was if somebody was in such terrible pain, he would prescribe a painkiller, but not an anti-inflammatory because there is no inflammation. So, you know, maybe talk about that a little bit. It seems like maybe there's differing opinions even in the TMS world about it.
Yeah, okay. Well, I guess my thoughts are on it that say you sprain your ankle, right? And you obviously see that the ankle swells up. And so we say that that's inflammation. And what I see is that that's just a natural part of the healing process, right? So whether it's, you know, I guess we'll say it's inflammation, right? That's what we're told it is. But that's a very natural part of the healing process. And you can visualize it. You can touch it. It's usually warm, right? And you can also watch it go away, like the inflammation goes down. But what that tells me is that inflammation is a very natural part of the healing process and not something to be afraid of, right? And, you know, this whole idea of, oh, it's inflammation in your back. I mean, most people, you lay them down, it's not like their back is swollen and warm and red. So that tells me that they're really just sort of making this idea up, partially because they've been told that by God only knows who, whether it was some sort of, you know, the supplement sales guy that came in and said, hey, you know, all your patients got inflammation in their back, so this is what you need. And the chiropractor took it at face value, right? Because I think even Sarno said that there's no studies showing that inflammation is what causes pain.
Yep.
That was also something he mentioned as well, which was fascinating. You know, I mean, some of the stuff like I learned, like the research studies, were what made the big change in my thinking as a chiropractor. I'm like, what do you mean people can have herniated disc and not have pain? That's not what I was told. This is blowing my mind.
Right.
How can I tell people this now? I can't tell people this now. Right. And so, I mean, those were monumental in shifting my whole approach to healthcare. It was amazing. I still reference them all the time because they help people relax when you can show them the research studies that say, like, look, you know, this herniated disc, like you can be pain free. Here's proof right here. You know?
I remember it was probably 6 months after I started reading Sarno's book, and you know, my entire thought process around this stuff completely changed. And my aunt had sent me a few text messages because she said that she'd hurt her shoulder, and that, you know, it was swollen and she wanted to go get an MRI. And this was only a day or two after it happened. And if you would have talked to me a year prior to that, I would have said, go get an MRI and you might have a torn labrum, you might have a torn rotator cuff and take ibuprofen and all this kind of stuff. And my thought had really changed and evolved quite a bit to where my thought then became, first of all, an MRI is incredibly expensive. Two, it might not tell the whole story. But then three, like if this just happened, it's probably so acute that you might get a false positive anyway. And so just giving it some time and just chilling for a little bit, you know, a couple weeks, a few weeks, whatever, might reveal something completely different. But then furthermore, that inflammation is a good thing. And so if you just need a pain reliever, take a pain reliever because you want the inflammation because it's a good thing. And it's almost like it's, you know, you're going to be getting more blood there. You're going to be getting a lot of the healing properties. And so now, like, I'm pretty anti-inflammatory.
Yeah, me too. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Because if I, you know, like the back tweak I was talking about earlier, basically, like, I haven't had a tweak of any kind, a knee, a wrist, an ankle, and I do CrossFit / weightlifting 5 days a week, and I'm, you know, I lift, I'm usually among the heaviest lifters in the class, which is, you know, to toot my own horn, I'm 33, I'm a dad of two, I, you know, did all that stuff that I went through, but I haven't had a tweak, which to me, 2.5 years without a tweak in any sport is pretty damn good. And
yeah,
it might have been, it was probably 3 weeks ago. I tweaked my lower back, but I just figured, okay, this is a TMS thing, and you know, I need to go and journal. And so I really beat the shit out of myself and trying to do the traditional TMS healing stuff, and it wasn't working. And I kept going through, kept working on it, kept doing all my rigorous activity, and my back wasn't getting any better. And, you know, lo and behold, I go and do a bunch of heavy deadlifts a week ago, and the tweak gets even worse. And I was just like, I kind of stopped for a second, and I was like, okay, wait a second. As Freud says, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. And maybe you did just tweak your back, and that's all that it is. So I took 5 or 6 days off, and as healing should happen, it feels better every single day, and it gets looser every single day. And so now I'm back, and I'm working around it, but I have no doubt at this point that it is just a tweak, and that's really all that it is. And if I needed to take a couple of Tylenol, then I did. But you know, 2 to 3 weeks of working around it, and it's almost like I forgot that tweaks can happen, and that there doesn't necessarily need to be a symbol behind everything. And natural healing time for any tweak, you know, a reasonable amount of time, probably a month, maybe a little bit more, depending on where it is. But injuries happen.
Precisely, and they are going to hurt. Right, but they do. The body heals, right? You break your bone, you scrape your skin, it heals.
Mike, this has been awesome. One of my favorites for sure. Are there any closing comments or wisdom or places people can find you? Or you're in Brussels, so you're.
I'm in Brussels.
You're in the other side. Although interesting note that like something like 9 to 10,000 people a month listen to this podcast, and the highest percentage coming from a single city is from New York. So your people from New York are they're hurting is my thought.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you say that, because when I was talking to them about it, they didn't want to hear it. They were like, "Nah, fix me now with your soft tissue approach. Let me get back to work." But anyways, New Yorkers are—they want it fixed yesterday,
right?
God bless them. Hey, I've had a great time speaking to you as well, Eddie. This has been super fun, and I have a website. It's drmikemurray.com. You know, you can look me up there and contact me if you would like. I'm also on Facebook. Same thing, Dr. Mike Murray. So yeah, that's where you can find me if you like, and I'd be happy to, you know, answer any questions or talk to whoever. Really, I'm super passionate about this approach to healthcare, and I'll talk your ear off about it if you let me.
Well, that's another spoiler alert, because I entirely plan on inviting you back in a few months to do a part two, because there's still other things that are outstanding, but we're already 1 hour and 10 minutes into this thing. So.
I know, I do. I have a client too in 1 minute. I have to get on the call with, but yeah, I've had a lot of fun too, and I would love to come back and talk to you more about other stuff, man. That would be awesome.
Cool. All right, Dr. Mike, thank you, my man, and
thank you, Eddie.
Yeah, we'll be in touch.
All right, talk to you soon.
All right, bye.